It is largely going to be tented accommodation, but that's better than being on the side of a street where you don't have any facilities. And that's our job, to make sure that those alternative facilities are available.
The Taoiseach says the time is coming closer for Ireland to show leadership and fully recognise the two-state solution in the Middle East. He says he's in regular contact with the Spanish Prime Minister about making a strong statement.
Myself and Prime Minister Sanchez have an understanding that we won't put into the public domain a specific date. And that's for a very straightforward reason, because there's still conversations ongoing with other leaders of other countries, and I intend to have further conversations with other leaders of other European countries in the hours ahead. But as I've said, the Taoiseach has said, as Mr. Ryan said, the time is coming close here now to do the right thing.
Israel's Prime Minister has wished success to his country's Eurovision hopeful as thousands of pro-Palestinian protesters demonstrate in Sweden against her inclusion. Benjamin Netanyahu said she's competing against an ugly wave of anti-Semitism. And that's your news for now.
Ireland's weather.
With McCarthy Insurance Group. For better value, home, farm, motor, life, health and business insurance in 2024. MIG.ie.
Continuing dry nationwide tonight with various cloud amounts. Clear spells will increase overnight and isolated mist and fog patches will form. Temperatures coming down to between 7 and 11 degrees. You're up to date to the home of What Did Lucy Kennedy Say to Colm Hayes? Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Now, Nighttime Talk on the home of the 80s and 90s.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
And a very good evening to you. It's Gareth O'Callaghan here for Thursday's edition of Nighttime Talk. It's nice to be with you. It's a very pleasant evening here in Dublin. Pretty much the same, I think, all over the country. And if you'd like to engage in any of the conversations tonight, why not give us a shout? You can WhatsApp us on 087-188-0008. That's 087-188-0008. Now, I'm going to talk, before I get down to what we will be chatting about this evening, we were talking about far-right thinking, the rise of the far-right, the methodology, the mentality of this relatively new form of outlook and form of belief system here in Ireland last night, the far-right. And it gave rise to a huge interest, I got to say. Quite surprised, actually, at the interest, considering we didn't need to go too near immigration, because there's a lot of other stuff that the far right idealism and ideology tends to deal with. But I mentioned that there's a book I'm reading at the moment, and it's called The Next Civil War: Dispatches from the American Future. Stephen March, who's a journalist for many, many years, and he's written for the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, the New Yorker, Esquire. He's got three novels on the go, and he lives in Canada, but most of his life is spent researching stuff in the United States. And the whole idea behind this book, he spent years putting it together. And if there's one book I can recommend that will give you a kind of a distant perspective of what's going on in the United States right now, this is the book. I really recommend it. The whole idea behind the book, the message that he puts out, this dispatch, is that the United States is coming to an end. The only question is how. He predicts the terrifying future collapse that so many of us don't want to see unfolding in front of our eyes. And based on his research for the book, he has spoken with soldiers and counterinsurgency experts about what it would take to control the population of the United States. And the battle plans for the next civil war have already been drawn up, not by novelists, but by colonels, both past and present, who are connected to the United States Army. And I know when a lot of people read a book, they tend to skip the introduction, but I would recommend, if you're going to buy this book, and if there's one book you should buy this year, as you've heard that expression so many times, I would say it should be this one. If you're interested in the future of society, this is just unputdownable. And I've been reading it over the last week or so, and I'm reading it in small chunks because, apart from anything else, there's a lot of information to absorb, but also I don't want it to end. It's so good. I read it until 3:30 this morning, and by the time I actually hit the pillow, my heart was pounding. In the book, in the introduction, Stephen March says, the next civil war in America won't look like a civil war in a smaller country. The United States is fragile but enormous. Its military might remains unparalleled around the world. Its economy determines the health of the global economy. Now, he says that if the American Republic falls, OK, democracy as the leading political system in the world falls with it. And if democracy falls, the peace and security of the global order falls. No one will escape the consequences. You might recall a guy called Peter Mansour. He's a retired US Army colonel and he was very heavily involved in the Iraq War. And he now studies uprisings and the insurgencies of the past. And he says in this book, it would not be, he's talking about the civil war that Marsh is predicting. He says, it would not be like the first civil war with armies manoeuvring on the battlefield, he says. I think it would be very much a free-for-all, neighbour-on-neighbour, based on beliefs and skin colours and religion, and it would be horrific. And the technical definition of a civil war, according to the Centre for the Study of Civil War at the Peace Research Institute in Oslo, is 1,000 combatant deaths within a year. And the definition of civil strife starts at 25 deaths within a year. Now, in the US in 2019, domestic anti-government extremists killed 42 people. The year before, they killed 53. And in 2017, 37. 2016, 72. And in 2015, 70. So what he says is, by this definition, America is already in a state of civil strife on the threshold of civil war. So I think it should be a part of every one of us, as far as a kind of a reading routine goes. I really think it's something we need to do just for ourselves as we move into this new, unfamiliar, unpredictable future world, that we need to read up on what the far right is as distinct from what the far right is not. And that's the bottom line on that. Anyway, this is a book I'm really enjoying and I recommend it wholeheartedly. It's called The Next Civil War, Dispatches from the American Future, and it's by Stephen March. It's a relatively new book, and I think what we'll do is we'll try and get him on the programme over the next couple of weeks. OK, we'll send him an email, because I think it's actually only just been published. Let me just check the front of the book here. It should say 2020... Now, hold on a minute. Here it is. No, it's 2 years old. But he still might come on and chat about it because it's very, very popular. It's still in the bestsellers in the United States. I just love that book. Now, we're going to talk tonight, among other things, about Ireland's membership of the EU, or the European Economic Community, as it was called when we joined it on the 1st of January 1973. We joined it back then with Britain and with Denmark, I think it was. And we became a member following the referendum that many of our parents will remember, if you don't, in which 83% of voters supported the move. Back then, it was called the EEC, and most of Ireland's current population won't have a clue about historic the event was, for good reason, because they hadn't been born yet. But I get the feeling that quite a few of our listeners here on Nighttime Talk might remember it. Now, you were probably like me, 11, 12 years of age, but you may remember your parents going out to vote. It was a huge, huge election to elect ourselves to join such a prestigious membership. And that's why it's important to reflect 51 years later on our membership and the many positive impacts that it's had and continue to have on the country. But there's a thinking now, because I suppose that the UK has Brexited, that a lot of Irish people are thinking it would benefit the Republic of Ireland to do the same and follow suit, to leave the European Union like the UK did. Now, there were arguments that leaving the EU would mean that the UK would save money that they would have been obliged to pay as a member if they stayed on. And in some cases, this money was used to fund policies that the UK didn't benefit from. For example, CAP, which was the Common Agricultural Policy. It was argued in terms of immigration that the EU's open borders put pressure on the UK's services, such as the NHS. The NHS costs the UK taxpayer billions per year. And on the other hand, as members of the EU, UK citizens also benefited from freedom of movement, which they no longer do. In addition, many of those who come to the UK from EU countries would benefit the UK economy each year. But as we've realised in recent times, the UK has now had to draw up the Rwanda Bill, as it's known in the British Parliament, in order to combat the number of immigrants who are arriving on British soil. But that's causing problems for us. And a lot of people are thinking that it would benefit the Republic of Ireland to leave the EU, and we could then adopt a similar stance that the UK has taken on many of the previous European issues and programmes that they've actually had to adhere to when they were members of it. But I don't know. Is it kind of 50% good, 50% not so good, if we were to leave, if we were to stay? Give us a shout and let me know what you think, because it's a very topical item. I mean, we're in this group now, which exponentially is now huge compared to what it was back in January 1973. I think there were only, seven, eight, maybe nine other countries that were members of the European Economic Community, which then became a union because it was drawing in countries from all over the continent, including Eastern Europe. And this was after the fall of the Berlin Wall. 087-188-0008 if you want to get involved in the conversation this evening. And Rob is there. Evening to you, Rob.
Good night to you, Gareth. How are you? Are you well?
I'm good, thanks. What do you think? Stay or leave?
Oh, leave, yeah. Before even this Rwanda Bill came to fruition. It's getting worse, to be honest, Gareth, the way things are going. For our country, anyway.
So, how would it benefit us to leave, Rob?
Well, we're going to be stealthed into a European army, and our neutrality is going to be done away with slowly but surely. Although we are only neutral in name by name only, anyway, in the first place.
Mm.
When you consider Shannon,
yeah,
and if, you know, so, but. No, here's my thinking. I mean, you have Michael Martin there last week or two, a couple of weeks back, talking about the triple lock, having to adjust it and do away with it and all this kind of stuff. And these are all things that they said that they would never do. To me, Gareth, it looks as if there is a war on the horizon, a European war on the horizon.
Which
will be fought between the EU and Russia.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong now, but
what would cause that? I know things are extremely delicate and undecided in terms of the relationship that Europe has with Russia, considering in recent times the war in Ukraine and that. But what would tip it over the edge, do you think?
What would tip it over the edge if the Ukraine started bombing more places in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're only getting over the border and what have you into Russia, but to get in further there, or to hit the likes of Moscow or somewhere like that.
Okay, so what would be the what would be the benefit of leaving the EU then? Would we not be safer with the?
You're going to get all the young people drafted up and sent off in this European army. Number one.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know whether the parents here now are happy enough with that.
Well, conscription was a big thing in the First World War, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And the Second World War, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But particularly from an Irish perspective, the First World War, back then we were very much still a part of the British Empire.
Yeah. But you see, that's just on one aspect. I mean, oh, yeah, that's right, the British Empire, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Mm.
Like, 1914 to 1918.
Looking beyond that, I mean, okay, let's look at it, and we obviously have to. I mean, in terms of immigration and the huge surge, which is uncontrollable.
Oh, it's massive.
At this stage. Like, but
yeah, now here's the thing. Yeah, that's okay. I'm going to touch onto that now.
Okay.
So we're a very small little country, relatively speaking, against all these other countries.
Right.
Extremely small in that respect. And I'm sure the guys in Brussels, the von der Leyen's and all these people, are telling the Dublin people, here's what you have to take. No ifs, buts, or maybes. That's it.
Right.
Our guys will just... What's that expression? Toe the line. But they toe the line anyway. Yeah. They toe the line anyway, yeah. Off the cap.
But they're toeing the line anyway, really, aren't they? I mean, if you cast your mind back to the bank bailout when the Troika came in here and that was the end of that. I mean, the banks became the property of the government, or more or less became, certainly AIB did. So did Bank of Ireland to a huge degree. As I call them, the visiting banks legged it, sold up, got out, and sold off their mortgage books to the other banks. So the only way out of that, according to the government back then, which was Brian Cowan and the late Brian Lenihan, was to bail out the bondholders.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. Someone said in Europe, if we didn't do it, a bomb would go off or something like that in Dublin. Like a financial bomb, not a bomb.
Yeah. Although, yeah.
There was some kind of thing, there was something that would have caused mayhem.
Yeah, I think what they said...
It's contagion.
Yeah, the word bomb was used, actually, but I think what they were talking about in terms of the financial bomb was that the banks would run out of money, okay? So there would be a rush. There would be a rush in the banks, which there was at one stage. I don't know whether you remember that weekend.
I do, actually, yeah.
Yeah, where people began to start to withdraw every cent they could get out of every ATM in the country. Mm-hmm. Many of the big ATMs, particularly in the cities, ran out of cash. The bank said it would take them probably 2 or 3 days to restock the ATMs. People then began to suspect that the banks didn't have the money to restock them. So it was almost like this psychological time bomb was ticking.
I think Greece had that issue as well.
Yeah, they did.
Greece, a couple of years later, that actually was played out in Greece.
Yeah. Yeah, Greece.
People couldn't get the money in the ATMs.
Greek people were told they could only withdraw so much cash, and a limit was put on it. They could withdraw so much cash, and that no more cash would be available on that bank account card had to withdraw the cash from until they were notified later. So basically what the banks were saying was that we've run out of money. And immediately people here began to think the same thing's going to happen. So let's get the cash out as quick as we can. Which was a shocking situation because for that whole week.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was Liveline and Joe Duffy, that was all they talked about. And people were crying, saying, I've lost my life savings. The banks have destroyed my money. My money is gone. But in some cases...
That's right, actually, yeah.
Yeah, like there were so many different levels to what was going on at that stage. And then, of course, you had the whole Anglo-Irish debacle that came in and like took precedence over everything else from the media perspective. That was all everybody focused on. But I sometimes wonder that if we hadn't been part of the European Union back then during the Celtic Tiger, would the Celtic Tiger have happened? And if the Celtic Tiger hadn't happened, where would we be now?
Right. Okay.
That's a lot to think about.
No. I understand. I mean, that Tiger thing, right? We spoke about this recently as well. It affected an awful lot of people. They got money out of it, or have you, or living lavishly. But obviously, you and me didn't get that lavish living.
No,
it passed us by.
Yeah, but I think those who greedily put their hands in the pot too deep and took too much, it came back to bite them in the years that followed. I mean, you know, the banks followed up on those debts and they came after them furiously. People lost not just their livelihoods, but a lot of people took their lives as a result of the debts that they weren't able to pay back because they were threatened with homelessness. The banks threatened to actually repossess the houses, and a lot of houses were repossessed. It was
there's not a lot of suicides.
Yeah. Huge number.
Because of all the people were in debt and they couldn't afford it to pay it back and what have you.
Yeah. Stay there, Rob. Yeah. Just stay with me. Jude is on one of the lines here. Hi there, Jude. Good evening to you.
Good evening to you.
You don't think it's a good idea to leave?
No, I think
especially in the most important now from a financial point of view, that gentleman there said we're a small country. We're a very small country with a not a huge population, and we have no massive, say, natural resources of any, say, consequence, say, compared to Iceland, which is lower populated than us, but they've got loads of natural resources. So we need Europe. England, they had their Brexit and they're suffering a bit, but they could afford to do it because they have a huge, massive financial strategy already set up. They have a bank, they have a banking industry, they have a defence industry, they have a technological IT industry all set up there. Yeah. That was, they could afford to take the hit. Ireland could not afford to take a hit like that, because you were there, you were talking about the banks being bailed out. The banks were bailed out by European money. We would not, the banks would not have been able to take that hit, or the government wouldn't be able to take it without borrowing money. And the EU banks, or the Central Bank of Europe, did not tell the Irish banks or Anglo or any bank about, they didn't tell them to lend loads and loads of money that they couldn't afford to lend. Yeah. Or they didn't tell them to lend money to people who couldn't afford to pay it back. They didn't advise that or say it. That was the bankers themselves. It had nothing got to do with membership of the EU.
Yeah.
So we need it financially. Can you imagine if we left? We're borrowing huge amounts of money from the EU funds, the Central Bank, to fund the health system, the running of the country. Now, if we hadn't got that money to, say, take, how would this government make everything else work? Taxes would go up huge. Yeah. And there's only so much tax you can take from a person's wage.
Yeah.
You know, financially, we could not function without the EU.
I remember the year after we joined the EU, I think it was the year we joined the EU, there was a 2-year period there where the highest rate of tax in the country was 78%. And it gradually came down as we became more settled into our new home in the EU. Taxes, they evened off and they lowered themselves gradually. But can you imagine living with a 78% tax rate if you were on, for example, I think that if you were earning 40,000 or more in 1974-75, you were subject to a tax rate of 78%. So that would probably be the equivalent of maybe double that now.
Yes, to have a pound in your pocket then, you'd have to earn £3.
Yeah. So in other words, out of every pound you earned, you'd come home with, what, 22 pence?
Yeah.
Right.
We couldn't
there, sir.
So if Ireland left the EU, we could, no way could this country function without money to draw on. We couldn't. I'm not just making that up. Physically and logically, where does the money come from if we don't have that pot to draw from? Where does it come from? If people say, we'd be better off leaving the EU. Where do we be on our own with no financial support, nothing? We'd be just set adrift. And because we are such a small, insignificant country, you know, no one would really care in Europe if Ireland left. It's not going to affect them like it did if Britain left them, because they had so many contacts and so many industries set up. They could take the brunt. We have nothing. So how would we, I'd like to know how we would financially benefit from leaving the EU.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And you know something, when you think of specific examples, think of Ryanair, okay? The Michael O'Leary success story. Michael O'Leary, as far as I can remember, was Tony Ryan's accountant. And Tony Ryan had this idea of a low-cost airline, and he bought in some airplanes from, I think it was a company that had gone bankrupt in Texas, in Dallas. And he bought in a few airlines, and it never took off because he was still trying to compete with Aer Lingus. And Michael O'Leary, if my memory serves me correct, said to him, let me take over the running of this company, Ryanair, and I'll turn it around. We probably won't make money for years, but I guarantee you we'll be buying extra planes very soon. We'll have queues miles long waiting to get on board those planes, flying between initially, I think it was Luton and Dublin, and then he went to Stansted and Dublin and Stansted and Shannon. And I remember living in England at the time thinking, this is genius. I would go to the airport and they used to have this standby thing there. And you'd go in the hope that you'd stay in the queue for hours in the hope that somebody wouldn't turn up for their flight. And you'd be able to get home for a reasonable amount of money, say 40 quid return, whereas Aer Lingus were charging 250 quid return, which no one could afford at that stage. I sometimes wonder, lads, would we go back to that way of living if we left the EU? Because Michael O'Leary, you got to remember, his HQ is in Stansted, OK? But he still regards Ireland as the natural home, as it were, of Ryanair. And I'm just wondering, if we left the EU, I think we could probably say goodbye to his allegiance to his home country. Would you agree?
Well, I'd say so, because most of their financial interests are abroad. Their isn't their head offices over in Belgium and France, their financial head offices? Yeah. They're not based here.
Hmm.
Like, the hope is
Michael O'Leary is a brilliant businessman, and he will go whatever way the wind is blowing. And if Ryanair is going to say lose money just because Ireland leaves the EU, I don't think, because they've got shareholders, I don't think they're going to, you know, be all nationalistic and patriotic. When it comes to money, patriotism goes out the window.
Okay, just stay with me, Steve. Good evening to you. You love the EU.
Well, here's the thing. What I want to ask the people, for all the haters of the EU, what I want to ask them is, if we do leave the EU, who's going to run the country? Is it the current government that we have?
Yeah, great question.
Because we all know what they are. And even if we do get in an independent government or vote in some other party, it will be the exact same thing. Only worse. Mm. Because there will be no rules and regulations around the stranglehold that they could have on the country. Now, I know there's a lot of directives that come from the EU, and we can make positive change from there. I mean, we're in the EU single market, which facilitates trade and investment. Mm. You look at the amount of investment and trade that happens in this country from outside of the country. If we leave, the EU, that all disappears in the morning.
It does.
Which my sentiments exactly.
It's a silly idea.
And if you, I remember the heavy goods vehicles drivers causing supply issues, because I remember, I think it was about 3 years ago in the summer of 2021, England, Wales and Scotland were seeing the effects of leaving the EU through trade. I remember Nando's and McDonald's and KFC were all affected by food shortages, and they had to close their restaurants. They couldn't they couldn't get the food in from the continent because they were no longer part of the EU. They now had to actually go looking for supplies as a non-EU, a non-EU country. They're not even a partner of the EU.
You only have to look at the regional development that has happened within this country as well, like our infrastructure. The EU has funded so much of that. Most of our roads, we got funding from the EU for that. People like to give out when things go wrong. They don't remember the good things for some reason. And there's a lot of good things that come from being a member of the EU. I mean, we have political influence than if we're in the European stage. We have security. We have much better security. If we're on our own, basically we're told, OK, lads, you're off out there on your own. How the hell are we ever going to defend ourselves? We only have to look at the defence force we have at the moment.
Yeah.
At least if the country ever did, for some reason, come under attack, we have the backing of the EU.
And even Britain will back us, because we need them for our defences. Britain, we still rely on Britain's air technology to see if anything untoward is up in the skies over Irish airspace. We still rely on Britain, never mind Europe. So I agree totally with what you're saying, Steve.
Yeah.
Well, what I would like to ask the people, get the naysayers on, because I want to ask them, who do they want running the show? Because they're great at saying, these people are great at being naysayers, saying, no, let's kick them out. Let's kick our government out. Let's get out of the EU. And then what? What's the plan after that, smart arse? They really don't have an answer for it.
Yeah.
And you can't cherry pick.
No, you're right. And, you know, that's a very valid point, Steve, because, you know, and this is something that I wanted to talk more about last night. We didn't get a chance and I thought we might leave it till next week. But now that you've said it, I think it's worth chatting about. And that's that. There are a lot of these people, these individuals, we've never heard of them in our lives before. As far as I'm concerned, they may not really have an interest in politics. They have an interest in issues and in cancelling out issues, not resolving them, cancelling them out. In other words, and I don't want to dwell too heavily on the immigration issue, because there are many other ones as well. a lot of these characters, particularly individuals who are running in both the local and EU elections, they're stating things such as, we can't continue to allow this to keep going the way it is. But they're not telling us what they plan to do that makes reasonable sense.
No solutions.
Look, look at good media all the time, and I like John McGourke. He's actually, to me, he's a sensible enough type of person.
He is, I agree.
Because I was watching him on TV3 one night, not TV3, Verge Media, and he basically said, look, everybody wants, get the foreigners. He says, and then what? The country falls on its arse.
Yeah, that's right.
With nobody walking. Our infrastructure just falls to pieces. Mm. You know, there are so many people in this country who are upset. And I understand that they're upset. We get that. We get you're upset. But we can't just shoot first and ask questions later.
Mm.
We need to think about these things.
Do you know, many of the Polish immigrants years ago saved our economy. And I don't know whether people remember that. We've got such a short memory in this country. You know, it's almost like the tide goes out, the tide comes in. The tide goes out, the tide comes in. And that's what we do. We take a stroll on the beach and we say, oh, the tide's out, or the tide's in. And it's like, the full moon and the new moon. We forget things. A great friend of mine, he arrived here from Poland with 40 euro in his back pocket. He got off the boat in Dunleary, and he went to a pub in Fairview in Dublin, and he said, and I hope he's listening today, Marius is his name, he's a great character. He's now an extremely successful businessman here in Ireland, and deservedly so. He's employed so many Irish people as a result of his hard work. But he walked into a pub in Fairview, and he asked the guy in the pub, he says, why aren't you open? It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He says, oh, we don't open here till about 8 o'clock. And he says, and there's an ad in your window. You're looking for staff. He says, yeah, I'm looking for a manager. And he says, I'll take the job. And he says, right, what experience do you have? And he says, I ran a pub in Poland. And he says, have you got good English? And he says, no, but it'll get better as I work.
Yeah.
He said, how many others have applied? And he said, a few. I said, well, why haven't you got a manager? The following day, he was the manager. He turned that pub around, he moved out of that pub, he took over another two pubs, he employed staff, those two pubs became successful, then he took over a hotel in the city centre, and he's turned that around and it's now making a fortune.
But do you know, I can guarantee you right now there's people out there listening to that story begrudging that man's hard work.
Yes, now you have it.
They are absolutely saying, oh, he's a foreigner, get him out, the usual crap that comes from their mouth.
Yeah, taking the job of an Irishman.
Absolutely. And he's
not making the effort.
Mm. I want to bring Marion in here. Hi, Marion.
Hi, Gareth. How are you, love?
Very, very good, thanks. Enjoying the conversation tonight. Fairly lively. It's kind of taken in.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of slightly broader than, I think, what we've become bogged down in over the last couple of months here.
Exactly.
And it's unfortunate because sometimes you got to get the old pickaxe out and break away at the surface and let some light in and look at some of the other issues here. And I think the whole idea of Brexit was a failure as far as I'm concerned.
Because, oh, definitely.
You know, I mean, for example, now that they've left the EU, the UK government can choose to change any law that existed at an EU level. And no one in the UK gave that much thought. It could include,
no, they didn't.
It could include reducing or removing employment, social protection. All decisions taken
even
at EU level have now been
employment.
Yeah. So all decisions taken at EU level have now returned to the UK. So you're now down to an insular type of decision making machine that they can do privately. They don't have to be accountable for. That would be my fear. That would be my huge fear of leaving the EU.
Pushed through on a scaremongering tactic.
All right, tell me more.
It was pushed through with immigration. Right, nothing else of the benefits of the EU were pushed forward. You have the whole thing, as you said, about labour law.
Yeah.
Right? If the European courts make a decision, then that supersedes any law that we have here. And the same way that it did in the UK. Insofar as you could be out sick from work, but you can still make holidays if you're a permanent employee, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one. The other issue with regards to it, the UK is also part of, well, it's the United Kingdom for a reason. So they're also caught with immigration from other countries in the Commonwealth. You have India, you have Australia, etc. Like, so it hasn't made a change. They're still seeing an influx.
Yeah.
Now, what they're after losing out on is because England and Ireland, or the UK and Ireland, are the only two English-speaking countries in the EU.
Yeah.
So this huge benefit from the ECE, the European Education Centre, whereby students from the likes of Spain, Italy, Poland, they would all come to learn English.
Mm-hmm.
And now those families that used to take those students in are down nearly up £10,000 a year.
They're up 10,000, yeah.
Yeah, up 10,000. They're down a year.
Yes, that's right.
So on Ireland's part, we're in the game because obviously if we can get the room for them, an Irish family can make up to €10,000 a year tax-free.
Marion, just Marion and Martin and Jude, will you stay with me? Because I've got to take a quick break and we're going to come back and continue chatting about this. We're talking about... The part we play in the European Union and the part the European Union plays on behalf of the Republic of Ireland, we're obviously going to send a whole new load of MEPs there after the election on the 7th of June next. Should we be sending them or should we be keeping them here using their political knowledge? In fact, looking at some of the individuals running for Europe, I wouldn't imagine there's an awful lot of political knowledge, but maybe their hindsight, maybe their life experience will... benefit them in that respect. I'd love to hear your view. Would it benefit us here in the Republic to leave the EU or should we stay? Let us know. 087-188-0008.
Nighttime Talk. Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
The home of the Kim Wilde 80s Show. Weeknights from 6.
This is Kim Wilde, and if you love the 80s, you're going to love these next couple of songs I've lined up to play for you. From Paula Abdul. And the Human League are coming soon.
Monday to Thursday from 6 p.m.
on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio,
the home of the 80s and 90s.
Atlantia Clinical Trials invite you to discover the power of blueberries. If you're age 50 to 65 with a BMI over 27, you can join their study on the effects of blueberry extract. Participation includes health assessments and 4 visits to their Blackpool clinic, plus €350 compensation upon completion. Help us unlock the potential benefits of blueberries. To find out more and join the study, visit AtlantiaClinicalTrials.com. Atlantia Clinical Trials, proving global science locally.
Working in the trade, you need suppliers you can always rely on, and ETAG will never let you down. We're number one for construction supplies, stocking all the fixings, insulation, drywall, power tools, and general building supplies you'll ever need to get the job done. And we can deliver them next day too, with the technical knowledge you need and the friendly, excellent service you want. Why go anywhere other than ETAG? See our latest offers at etag.ie. ETAG. Consider it done.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk
with Recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on Recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Thursday's Nighttime Talk. This is Gareth O'Callaghan. We're talking about the implications of leaving the EU, and we're kind of saddling them up alongside the benefits of staying within the EU. And Marion made a very interesting point there. She said that the immigration issue pushed Brexit through. Which, realistically, when you look at it, you are right. It was argued that the EU's open borders were putting pressure on the UK services, especially the NHS, which just couldn't afford the number of people in the country. But then they realised after Brexit that what could they do with all of the immigrants in the country? And it didn't work because they continued to come in. And as we know, there was tragedy there in the Channel there a couple of weeks back when a number of immigrants were drowned. I want to bring Martin in here. Martin, good evening to you.
Good evening, Gareth. I'm very well, thank you.
Good to talk to you. Now, you disagree with Steve, who loves the EU.
Yeah, I
agree. Why do you disagree with him?
Well, I disagree with him because Steve asked the question, and rightly so, If we replace the government we have at the moment and we weren't in the EU or the common market as it was being put when I was in my early teens, what happens now is almost every decision is deferred to Europe. So it allows the elected politician in Ireland to stand aside and say, well, it's out of our hands. When you have Micheál Martin has the effrontery to tell the Irish people that he doesn't want to be hearing about sovereignty. Surrender our sovereignty, we surrender our nationhood. That's what it's about. Now, Marion is absolutely right. I was going to make that point myself. The UK are living with the consequences of being a world power at one time,
yeah,
of being a conqueror. That's what they're living with the consequences of. The whole agenda in the UK to get out of the EU, it used, in my opinion, what's within the UK, there's an inherent kind of xenophobia that I don't believe exists in Ireland. I really don't believe that. I hear all this nonsense about the far right. If you can express an opinion where you say you love your country or you want your country to succeed and all the people in your country, not just those born here, but those who come in and contribute, I have no issues with that. When it comes to the resources that we have in Ireland, I'll give you a couple of things. One, the peat bogs, where we were told we can no longer harvest peat from the bogs, yet it was being imported. We had to import it then from, was it Romania? I can't remember where it was in Europe.
I think it was Lithuania.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah. So we're now paying to import something that we had as a reasonably sustainable resource here. Now, and another resource...
And it turned out to be rubbish, by the way. It couldn't be...
But another resource that we have in Ireland, apart from, I think, the primary resource we have are the people, if we were to be allowed to actually govern ourselves properly, another major resource we have... There's enough tidal and wind energy hits the west coast of Ireland daily,
yeah,
year in, year out, all year round. There's enough energy actually hits the west coast of Ireland to power all of Europe constantly at this moment in time. We could provide electricity to power all of Europe. That calculation has been done and it's standing.
Yeah.
We have all kinds of resources. Our fishing industry has been decimated. Our farming industry has been decimated.
Yeah.
Every important decision is deferred to Europe. And we're told, oh, there's nothing we can do about it. It's coming from Europe. Now, I'm all in for a common market. It's like I'm all in for a credit union. You know, there are benefits. But when it morphed from what was supposed to be what was put forward, I remember what it was it? Austin Keating or Justin, I can't remember the man's name.
It was Justin Keating and Austin Curry. Austin Curry was Fine Gael, and I think Justin Keating was Labour.
He used to present a programme on RTE before we went into Europe. It was called Into Europe.
I remember that.
Pardon?
Yeah, I remember that. Go ahead.
And we were being presented with all the benefits. And there were huge benefits to going into a common market. We're no longer in a common market. We're now in a dictatorship where everything is decided outside of Ireland. Now, at this moment in time, currently... Pardon?
Sorry, is that you, Steve?
Can I just interject? So what you're doing is you're coming on and doing exactly what I said most people do. You're coming on and being the naysayer of all the things that they've done wrong, and you're leaving out the things that they've done right. Now, you spoke about the agricultural industry in this country. I mean, right now, who is funding them? That's the EU. And, you know, you're forgetting about things like free movement that we have within the European Union.
Hang on for a second.
Go ahead.
Hang on for a second. If you're on a gallows, the hangman says, I'm going to make the rope longer. It doesn't matter how long the rope is. They're eventually going to hit the bottom. The farming industry in this country is being financed, but it's being financed into ruination. That's the whole point, because it's a deliberate policy. It's deliberate.
But Martin, what you're also forgetting is, if we did leave the EU, I want you to imagine this for a minute. Let's paint a picture. We leave the EU. You know as well as I do the way politics work. it swings from left to right, left to right, left to right. You know, currently we have a left-leaning government there, you know, and what's going to happen is people get peed off and they take in a right-wing government. Now, if we don't have the EU to legislate us and to tell us what to do, and you have a right-wing government in control, what are they going to do? They will run rife through the streets of this country because they're not controlled. And that's usually what happens when countries stand alone. We need an overseer. We need these people there.
No, Steve, we don't need an overseer because the analogy or the picture you paint applies equally to the people in the EU. It swings left, it swings right. The fact is, we're supposed to be a sovereign country. And we've lost our sovereignty. I'm not saying everything would be peachy. Not by any means. Things would be difficult.
Yeah, hang There's on, no Pauline, I'll bring you in a minute.
There's a lot of noise in the background there. Wow.
I know, I'm not sure. Is somebody... Just if you've got radios on in the background, if you could just turn them off. I don't know what you're doing there. It sounds like somebody's cutting their hedge or something.
Somebody's in a wind tunnel there.
Anyway, we'll sort it out. Pauline, are you there?
Yeah, I can hardly hear you, Gareth. I don't know what's going on. Is it Gareth?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's nice to chat to you, Pauline.
I think that was Stephen that was speaking last, is it?
It was Stephen and Martin. Yeah, Martin disagrees with Steve.
Yeah, I think
Steve
I agree with
that. Okay.
I think I agree with the tail end of what I heard Martin say.
Okay, yeah.
Absolutely, the backbone of this country should be the fishing industry. We're an island and we're surrounded by water. As far as I know, and I stand corrected, we're allowed only to fish 30 miles off our own coast, which
is absolutely
We're also exporting
so much of the fish we're allowed to catch. We're only allowed to catch a quota of what we could actually catch.
That's for a long time.
Yeah,
that needed to be nipped in the bud for a long time. As far as the EU is concerned, I do not agree with anything that Stephen has said, because my understanding, and I stand corrected on this, I'm not political really, I'm only learning about these things over the last few years.
Okay.
The EU, as far as I'm aware, is run by America, and America is not being run by Biden. It's actually being run by Obama and the deep state. So that's who is dictating to the world the new world order about how we're going to live and what we're going to do.
But the most important thing
that needs to be addressed where agriculture or where our climate or anything else is concerned is the amount of chemtrails that are in the air that are causing a dimming over the country and are going to cause low yield in any agricultural area and contamination of the air and soil, but nobody's addressing that.
Well, Pauline, hang on. You've just brought up three different conspiracy theories which have widely been...
They are conspiracy theories.
Seriously,
no,
they are.
Saying that, Gareth.
Barack Obama and Deep South, all of
no,
that.
No, Gareth, they're not conspiracy theories.
The New World Order, World Forum, the Economic
I can
Forum.
Hear you.
I know, I'm trying to explain to you, and I can't chat to you if you're...
They absolutely are not conspiracy theories.
They are conspiracy theories, Paul.
They absolutely are not.
Gareth.
Go ahead. Is this Martin? Yes.
Yeah, I would just say, regardless of what my opinion may or may not be, the assassination of John F. Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the points of view would be regarded as conspiracy theories. But that doesn't mean they're not true.
That's now, true, yeah. Yeah.
The other issue
But
is,
can I just say in relation to the conspiracy theories that if you give editorial credence to something that hasn't been factually proved, you're creating a conspiracy theory. For example, Oliver Stone's 1990...
Sorry, Gareth, if I could just say if you're going to apply that metric, you have to accept and admit that global warming is a conspiracy theory. Because it hasn't been proved.
If you're
using that metric, that's where it stands.
I would be inclined to agree with
you. Remember, Martin's a big...
Steve? Kev, you're that's you, Kev. Nice to talk to you. Welcome along. Well, you're saying what about Martin?
He's a huge Trump supporter. He believes Trump didn't mean this for people to drink bleach.
God in heaven. Kevin, go and read a book, will you?
Kevin,
Martin, tell me I'm wrong.
Go back and listen to what the man said. Look, I'm not... I've just
wrong.
Told you you're wrong. Hang on for a second. I wanted to make a point. At this moment, we're talking
just,
about...
Hold on, one second.
Now, Pauline probably had the vaccine. That's why she's as nuts as she
is. Kevin, you sound like you're shouting from the back garden there. I can't hear what you're saying.
Get back in your box and talk about the EU.
Okay,
and stop
Kev.
Going on about conspiracy theories.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Garrett.
Yes, Martin. Sorry.
May I make one important point as I see it at the moment. Mm-hmm. At this moment in time, our biggest single trading partner is the UK. Mm. Okay. They are our biggest trading partner.
Kev, will you just stop talking for a minute and let Martin finish?
No,
and then I'll. Are you sitting in another room? I can barely hear you. Will you ever put your phone up to your ear and up to your mouth? That's what they're for, please.
There you go.
That's perfect. Did you have it sitting on the table or something?
No, I just had it on speaker.
Well, I don't want loudspeakers. I don't want hand-free systems. This is phone to mouth, okay?
Okay.
So it's just give the kiss of life to your phone there and then you can take part in the conversation.
As I was saying, Gareth.
Yes, Martin, yeah.
At this moment in time, our biggest trading partner is the UK. Now, I don't believe if we left the EU that that trading situation with the UK would be in any jeopardy. I really can't see... I can't see any way that that would happen. I think it would actually increase. Mm-hmm. I think there would be a closer cooperation between Ireland and the UK. We have historical differences and difficulties. I'm not going to deny that. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool constitutional Republican. When I say Republican, I mean Republican with a small r. I don't mean a Sinn Féin Republican. I believe in the precepts and whole the concepts of a proper republic where every individual in the state is equal. But I can't see that if we left the EU as it stands at the moment, if we went back to a simple common market, as I said, like a credit union, or having a trading block, not with people making decisions that have huge effects on the day-to-day lives of people in this country. I'm not just talking about the money in their pocket. I'm talking about everything is being affected. Our rights are being taken away. Mm. All the things that are happening. And if we had a change of government with people who were more, no, we're not doing that. We're not going with the EC or with the EU. I think it would be better because at this moment in time, what happens is no matter what important decision is made, it's deferred to Europe. Oh, Europe, tell us we can't do
Martin,
that.
Yeah. Martin, can I ask you a question?
Is this Steve? Yeah.
Steve, yeah, sorry,
Steve,
sorry.
Okay, Steve.
I've been quiet for a while just listening to some of the nonsense, not coming from you, Martin, from the other guys. So you mentioned wind power and tidal power coming off of the west coast of Ireland. You know, and I agree, we have some of the biggest resources in the world. We have one of the biggest zinc veins in the world in this country, which is, it's all well and good. Where would we get the investment money to mine all these resources? Where would we get that?
Steve, you get that from the same place you get any kind of investment. You put it out there and you bring in investors. Mm. We don't have to go cap in hand to Europe for everything. That is exactly the problem.
Hang on there, Jimmy. Well, I'll bring you in a minute. Hold on, Jimmy. We'll just have another minute on this, and then I'll bring you in there, Jimmy. Thanks for being patient.
Steve, it's like North Sea oil or anything else. No one individual is going to fund it. Countries don't like to fund it.
No, but the problem is, Martin, what happens when you hand over these things to private companies? You're handing over the rights then to private companies.
You're handing over the rights to private companies, but hang on, Steve, you do so as a partner with that private company.
Yeah.
You don't just hand over all the rights. As happened when we had the Shell to Sea operation going on, where gas rights were just literally handed over for nothing.
And why can't we do that with the EU? Why can't we do that with the EU?
Because that's not the way it's structured. It's as simple as that. We have people elected in this country who are supposed to represent us, and they don't. That's what it comes down to. Because they're
absolutely. So yeah, it's about the people who are in power. And like I said earlier on to you, Martin, if we were standing on our own 2 feet, it is about the people in power. The people in power in this country could then make decisions to completely screw us up altogether if we were
together. They could make decisions that would make us better.
Some of the biggest companies in this country are international companies. They're from the States. They're from Germany. They're from Japan. They're from China. I mean, if it wasn't for them, for example, the pharmaceutical companies, most of the pharmaceutical companies that operate within the Republic of Ireland are American. They provide Irish employment to Irish people. I think 200, 250,000 people work within the greater pharmaceutical company industry in this country. So, I mean, without investment from abroad, we'd go broke.
Absolutely. And look, I completely understand that. And I'm all up for capitalism. You know, capitalism is awesome. You know, it makes progress. But what I'm saying is, if we stay within the EU...
Okay.
The alternative is if we stay in the EU, which I can't see us leaving anytime soon. No. You know, I think this is just hot air from people. If we stay within the EU, we can do all of the things that Martin wants to do. All of these things. We just have a greater governance from them. Because in the EU, it is split left and right. There is two different types of politics that happen in the EU. Whereas in Ireland, it's one type of politics.
Mm.
And I want to protect that. I want to make sure that you have people at the top of the table who are left and right, who are going to come together and make decisions. I don't want one type of government getting into power, because that would be just regression. That's all that would be.
Steve.
Yes, Martin.
Steve, can I ask you something? Okay.
Yeah.
And I absolutely concur and I agree with the principle you're espousing there. Give me an example of what you regard as a, if you want to call it, we won't call it right wing, we'll just call it conservative or right. We won't go right wing or far right. Just conservative or right. Give me an example in the past 20 years of anything that has come from Europe that you would regard, not that I would regard, because Kevin has talked about me as being a Trump fanatic or whatever. I'm not. But give me something you would regard that you can think of from your own memory as being, that's a fairly conservative.
Employment. Let me throw in employment. The number of Irish people who've gone abroad to all of the EU countries and they've found great employment, great jobs, great careers, great lives. They've even met their partners. They've set up their own businesses in these countries. I think for that reason...
How has that benefited Ireland?
How has that benefited... Well, put it this way. Those Irish people who couldn't get Irish jobs went abroad and got jobs abroad.
Yeah. And why did they not get jobs in Ireland? This is what it comes down to. I'm not blaming everything on the EU. But what I'm saying is...
Martin, it's an excellent question. Can I answer it?
Please do, Steve.
Yes, of course. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right. So... I agree that, you know, there's not many things that I can actually cherry pick out here. Actually, I can't think of one of them except for employment.
My point is made.
Hold on a sec. But what I said earlier still stands. If we did have a government who were conservative in this country, it'll only go one direction. At least with the EU, there are plenty of people in the left, plenty of people in the left, or the opportunity for left and right. With a single state like Ireland, you'll either have one or the other. At least with the EU, you can have the opportunity to have both.
Martin, well, a couple of things. Sorry, just in relation to your question there, and I'm going to have to take a break. I'm going to have to take a break for the news. Just lads, stay with me. Just a couple of things. And once again, as you said, Martin, we easily forget things that have happened in the past. Without the EU, we'd still be traveling along local roads in this country. We wouldn't have motorways. You know, without the EU, we wouldn't have the style of buses and the style of trains that we have now. We'd still be chugging along on little school buses on roads that aren't fit for tractors.
But what you're doing there, Gareth, is you're saying, well, you know, we give up one hand and we get back with the other.
Yeah.
It is circular. Yes, we have had some things back from the EU. But look at what we've given away. Mm. If instead of giving all that away, if it was just a common market, as it was supposed to be originally, a common market in which we had free trade agreements.
Lads, I'm running over here. Will you stay with me, please? And I've also got Jimmy and Alan there who want to join the conversation in a couple of minutes. I'll be about 5 minutes. I've got the 10 o'clock news coming up. If you'd like to contribute, if you'd like to take part, 087-188-0008 is our number.
Nighttime Talk. Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio, the home of Colm and Lucy in the morning.
The Coronas have announced two huge summer 2024 shows in Dublin and Galway. And all week on Colm and Lucy in the morning, we have tickets up for grabs for their Fairview Park gig on June 15th.
Everybody loves a bright summer evening gig, and we have tickets to give away every single morning. Hear the Coronas bang out hits like Heroes and Ghosts and the San Diego Song.
To be in with a chance of winning, simply tune into Colm and Lucy in the morning, weekdays from 6 a.m.